Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here. This is my favorite time to do podcasts, right before an amazing, amazing get-together here. We're at a job fair at TACT, miles away from our Denver Experience Center, where we have our podcast studio down there. But we're on-site today here working with a lot of great people here at TACT. TACT stands for Teaching Autism Community Trades. And so we're at the job fair here today, and Colorado is a leader with so much stuff that we're going to look at how all of these conversations around innovative housing and alignment from all these different mindsets and master facilitators coming together. And I had to give credit where credit's due and all of the alignment to where one of my life coaches and mentors, Matt McMullen, here, and we did a, he was a co-host where he brought me to a conference around IDD. And there, and what, when Matt has brought this in, it's just been amazing to see how many populations need support. So I'm going to turn the baton to Matt, our co-host here, shortly after we talk about the focus today. Is, you know, the main message is that we got to figure out how to put the people in these businesses together. And that's really what, if you hear the noise in the background, that's what's happening here at this job fair. Super cool stuff. And we have to figure out how the private sector that needs to align with the different housing authorities and put the proper efficiencies to scale all these different impact funds that are available out there. Because where does the money come from, right? Matt, two things we don't have enough of, time and money. How do we put all that stuff together? And what's the main message you're going to talk here today?
Well, you know, just as Dre should have said, you know, we're here in Inglewood up to much good here in Inglewood, Colorado. And so, you know, I met Danny at the First Place Symposium down in Phoenix in October of 2024. And started by a woman named Denise Resnick, who is like Mother Teresa for the IDD community. And so I had the chance to meet Danny and started to learn his story. You'll hear a lot about it here coming up. Started the Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce and really has been a great networker and inspiration for me to go out and start to create housing and inclusive communities for the population. So started a company called IDEA, IDDEA, which is an idea for IDD. And we have a thing called the Trailhead Community, which is an urban model down in Littleton, Colorado. And we're working on a project in Boulder County that is going to be our rural model. So with that, let's get to the man himself.
Awesome. Well, I want to give some of our perspectives from the pre-interview before we get to hear Danny's story. Find the biggest pain and fix it. It blew my mind with the different data that Danny's going to be bringing to the table here today. But from our pre-interview, one of the big things was you have to put $100,000 investment from the state of Colorado per kid per year with autism. And so just stop and think about that, because that's a lot. And we're here in the mix at the TACT job fair. And there's so many different incentives I'm learning about with leaders through Danny and Liam that we're going to talk about. Matt, what's your perspective here for today?
We talked a little bit about this before we started recording, and yeah, I'm a big Dr. Seuss fan, you know, and one of my favorite things is Horton Hears a Who, and the other one's Oh, the Places You'll Go. But really what I've seen as the challenge is letting people know, like, you know, like Horton did, we're here, we're here, we're here. And so, you know, I've done a lot of stuff with homeless issues, and those folks are very visible. You'll see them busking, or you'll see them, you know, standing at the off-ramps. In the freeways, but you do not see the IDD population because the majority of them are living with their adult parents mm-hmm. who are aging. And so it's this sort of silent, invisible population. So I really want to talk to Danny about how do we get the word out, the work that he's doing with Colorado Disability Opportunity Office, and just have everybody get to know how incredible this dude is.
Awesome stuff. Well, I'm here live at TACT looking at the one and only Danny Combs. The vision behind this, behind him is the stories that we're going to show on the social media and all the stuff around this of his first truck and all these vehicles and all these people. Danny, what an honor to have you at this facility and unpack this story. Let's do the speed round and get to know you and have as much fun as possible.
Let's do it. Sounds great.
All right. What's your favorite beverage?
Black coffee.
All right, black coffee. So after some black coffee, what is a favorite place that you take your black coffee and you travel to?
Ooh, if I could travel anywhere, it'd be where I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina. I think there's something about the Blue Ridge Mountains. The Rockies are amazing, no doubt. They are magical. The Blue Ridge is mystical. It is just incredible. Yeah.
Give us one story from that.
Well, it's where I grew up. I mean, like, growing up in Asheville, North Carolina, it was just so full of bluegrass culture. I just remember all these mornings of growing up and just learning so much from the people around me. I learned to work on homes and cars and play guitar and just be in the mountains and just the fog, and it's amazing. Yeah, I miss
Beautiful.
It very much.
Awesome. Well, tell it about your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos that you're breaking down here at TACT that we passionately call the art of construction.
My favorite hobby's interest is still playing guitar and working on classic cars. Like, I will be turning a wrench or have a guitar in my hand at all times. Like, that is still, after all of this, is still what I love to do, for sure.
Awesome stuff. Well,
so, I'll just stop for a second, because I heard some stories about, like, you as a guitarist. Mm-hmm. Can you talk just about a few of the people that you played with?
I've got to play with a bunch of people. So music was my living in Nashville for over a decade. You know, I grew up in a family of trades folks, so naturally when you're fourth generation, you decide, I'm going to run away to Nashville and do that for a living, and that's what I did. And I actually had the shortest interview of my life, but it was great. I had an interview with a gentleman. His name was Greg. And I sat down across from him, and he said, I heard you're a nice guy. Is that true? And it's like, how do you answer that question? And it was like, I think so. Yeah, thank you. And he's like, all right, great, you're hired. And that was it. And so I started with working for a man named Mike Atkins for a company called Mike Atkins Entertainment. And we worked with a whole bunch of different country artists and Christian artists, everything from C.C. Wine and Sandy Patty, FFH, Jackie Velasquez, Anthony Evans. Got to work with a group called Everlife that was doing a movie called... Tarzan for Disney, and they were doing some Disney stuff, and I was the one that got to teach them how to play music and stuff to get started, and that ended up spiraling to all kinds of different things, where getting to work with and open and tour with and play with in studios, bands from like Pivotplex on Sony to getting to work with like Faith Hill and Taylor Swift, and I mean, just all kinds of wild stuff, and ended up getting to develop a music program in Nashville, which was amazing, and it was a great time of life. It was good. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Man.
What's some cool inspiration for today? So, cool part of your story, Asheville, guitar.
Asheville to Nashville.
Asheville to Nashville.
Just adding in. Awesome. And was silent in the first one.
Can you unpack the rest of the story that led us here to this table today that led you to being the inaugural director at the Colorado Disability Opportunity Office, the founder at TACT, and the co-founder at the Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah, it all started with my son, Dylan. So my son, he's incredible. He's now 16 years old, and yesterday, trying to teach him to drive in the snow, that was quite an experience, teaching your kid to drive in the snow. Even with all-wheel drive, people seem to forget that, you know, all cars have far brakes, and it's kind of wild slipping and sliding. So he did good, though. So Dylan was diagnosed with autism, and that changed my life. That was absolutely the catalyst that put me exactly where I'm supposed to be. So back in Nashville, at Vanderbilt, this is before they have the incredible Frist Center that Kayvon is running, that I think you, Matt, got to meet Kayvon or hear Kayvon talk to. Now it's this incredible program. Years ago, Nashville was a lot smaller. It's grown quite a bit. And so started looking for ways to support my son and develop his strengths and talents. And at the time was taking him to all these different therapies. Like a lot of families and individuals, you're paying out of pocket if your insurance doesn't cover things and you're spending tens of thousands of dollars a year on insurances. And while all these therapists were talking about the things he couldn't do and what was wrong with him, I was noticing all the things that he can do and all the things. And I was that dad that was letting my son play with scissors. So even before he could say, hello, Dad, I love you, I was letting him play with scissors, and he was building and making these amazing things. You could see he could conceptualize it and actually do it. And so coming from a family of the trades folks, I put together the idea, TACT, and had the chance to meet Dr. Temple Grandin and said, I have this idea for a strengths-based program that uses the trades. I can't find anything else out there like it. And she's like, there's not. You need to put down your guitar and go do it. And I don't know if it was just the mood of the time, but that was the catalyst. That was the straw that broke the camel's back and said, okay, I'm going to do this. And had great lawyers from when I was music that were back in Manhattan that helped us get it set up. And we quickly grew from that 58 Chevy that you see sitting over there to this 19,000 square foot facility that they have now. And it grew from a dad in the back of a pickup teaching the skills that his parents taught him and grandparents too. Now there's a staff of 20. Becky, that's running TACT, she's been with it since the beginning. It's really been us doing it together. She's done incredible getting it this large, and now they partnered with a New York-based company called FedCap, and it's going to grow all over the country and is leading the state of Colorado. And during that process, TACT had won a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Award, and this was in 2022. And sitting at a table with a bunch of industries that valued inclusion, they asked me, what's neurodiversity? And it blew me away that all these leaders had no idea what neurodiversity was in 2022. So that was the catalyst for Dr. Amanda Kelly, Tiffany Feingold, and I starting the Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce. And then that grew so much and got so much recognition that when legislators created the legislation for the Colorado Disability Opportunity Office, which is this incredible new state office that was created to oversee policy and strategy for all disability across Colorado, and they put out a request for people. I put my name in the hat, and lo and behold, Governor Polis ended up offering me the job. So pretty amazing.
So cool. All right. I'm going to pull an audible here. It's live.
Go for it, man.
Yeah.
Eva.
Go for it.
So I didn't ask this, but today is no school. So yeah. My daughter is back here doing her thing. And on the way here this morning, my 10-year-old daughter, I always like to put myself in other people's shoes like you just did.
Sure.
So I asked my daughter, I said, Eva, my 10-year-old daughter,
right?
Do you know what autism is?
Yeah.
And she said this.
Yes, I know someone who has autism. My best friend's little sister has autism. It's a condition with your brain.
And then we talked about, you said you don't like when they say this, right?
Calling it a disease is incorrect.
What did you say it was?
A condition.
A condition. So I start this conversation where you have to empower people, right?
Yeah.
And so you talked about the guitar, your passion.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to put your passions aside and
Thank
get
you.
People to step
That was
up
great.
To the mic,
yeah.
right? And so empowering people is really what today is about, in my opinion. So
yeah.
I always say the statement, vision without traction is a hallucination, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to start by saying, you and I here as visionary leaders, we strive to step up to the mic. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't,
yeah.
right? And their voices need to be heard. Like my daughter, they say she's kind of a little version of Devin. She loves to step up and perform. That's why I assumed she would do
great.
It, and she did
she
it,
didn't
right?
She didn't hesitate at all. She came right on the mic. That was
so,
awesome.
I want to pass the baton to you, Danny, and talk about Liam, who earlier gave the tour and the passion about the traction this morning.
Yeah.
Can you talk about, you know, as your new role of passing the baton to the development of TACT?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the catalysts of me getting the opportunity to accept this new opportunity with the Colorado Disability Opportunity Office meant that I could no longer be here at TACT, and that's a hard thing to do, is to trust it. And I think the leadership at TACT is exceptional. And so Becky, that's the head of TACT now, she's been with it since the beginning. She's done an incredible job. Lori, that's running the specialized day school. Liam, that's the development director that's working with the community partners and the businesses. Mark, that is working with all of the employers that you see here today to create that opportunity and get everybody placed. There's a great infrastructure in place. And it's a good feeling knowing that something that you started and getting to that point where you have to walk away from it, and then you're trusting others to carry on the baton of what you started, that there's a good group of people doing it. And I think that all of them, Liam included, are going to do an exceptional job, which is very exciting.
Yeah, and Matt, maybe you could talk a little bit about one of my big takeaways from the tour this morning. And Bella and our amazing storytelling team are going to be walking through this after and doing some social media from the podcast. But he talked about retention rates and really spoke to me as a business owner, mm-hmm. because you got to really meet the people, the municipalities, and the businesses where they are. Matt, what did you remember what he talked about on the retention rates?
Yeah, you know, it's what as you guys were talking, I was just writing some notes to myself just about, you know, the podcast is kindling, and how do we connect, you know, TACT to factories and housing developments through the trade, so that these adult children are basically building housing for their own community. And so when we're walking through with Liam, he's talking about a neurotypical person coming out of college, getting a job. And I call them the zigzag generation, where they're moving laterally, always trying to look for the next job or another $10,000. What he shared was that, you know, 95% of folks within the neurodivergent thing actually stick at that job for 10 years. And then they have 90% effectiveness in the job. And it's like, you compare that to neurotypicals right now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's like, why would you not hire someone who's neurodivergent? They're loyal. Yeah. They're focused.
It's the biggest irony in the world in the sense that you have, it's the largest unemployed demographic in the country. Devin, as we talked about, only, when you look at the folks here in Colorado, it has about a 12% employment rate or an 88% unemployment rate. But at the same time, Matt, you're exactly right. They stick once they get employed and they're on time and they are more efficient. And, you know, there was a great study that came out of Blue Star Recyclers, which is the largest electronics recycling facility here in Colorado. They only hire people that are neurodivergent and have IDD. They work a different work week, and they outpace every other electronics recycling facility. And the university ended up doing a study on them, and they found just that. So it was, like, really amazing to have this independent study to verify this data, which was pretty amazing. And, in fact, in the company's history, they've only had one reported injury, knock on wood, and that injury was the former CEO. He fell off the back of a truck, and he's neurotypical. Everybody else played by the rules and did it okay. So he always jokes. He just retired, and now his son Sam has taken over, and they're pretty awesome. And I think that's exactly it, is this fact of trying to bring the awareness to the community that this population exists. For whatever reason, construction, employment, the skilled trades, they've all looked at all these other demographics for finding people to employ. They're still overlooking the neurodivergent community. And they're literally waving their hands, screaming like, please hire me. And they're still not getting the opportunity to dive in and get the training. The fact that TACT has been doing this 9 years now and is still the only program like this in the country, why? There needs to be more folks out there doing this.
Colorado Disability Opportunity Office, can you talk about specifically, because you mentioned that you were lucky enough for Paulus to pick you. I think you would have made a mistake if he hadn't picked you. But the question is, what does the Disability Opportunity Office do, and how are you positioning it to address this community and all the needs that you see?
Yeah, so the way that came about for me is during this journey of TACT, one of the things that I got to be involved with was during working with the Department of Education. We had a workforce group together that helped pass a bill, Senate Bill 23-219. And what that ended up doing was creating an entirely new public school designation called a specialized day school. And what we found is, in the course of creating TACT, which just does not fit in any of the boxes that exist currently, is that the rules were just not in the favor of neurodivergent individuals trying to get employed. And so that, when that bill passed and that statute was created, it created an entirely new pathway and it changed the rules of the game for more programs like this to be successful. Since then, TACT became the first one in the state of Colorado. Now there's 7 different new schools that have opened trying to work for neurodivergent and people with disabilities to transition to employment, to create opportunity, which is amazing. That was so impactful for me that when this opportunity came to go to the Colorado Disability Opportunity Office, this is part of the reason I went for it, is I recognized that policy has the ability to change the rules of the game, to make it more equitable for people to actually have a level playing field and actually get that opportunity. And so with this office, what we get the opportunity to do is just that, is to work with all the disability groups, all the nonprofits, listen to them, see what's happening on the ground. Where are their barriers? What are the things that are taking place? That, because while policy can be wonderful and mean bill well meaning, it's always the people on the ground doing the work that end up finding the details that people just didn't think of. And it's not that they were malintent, they just didn't recognize how things couldn't get done. And by being that advocate and that voice to then take that from what's happening on the ground and have the voice of the government to actually be like, okay, this isn't working, we need to change it, that's powerful at that point. Because then all of a sudden, we get the opportunity to change it. In addition to that, we get the opportunity through the black license plates, which here in Colorado, they're very, very popular. And there's a great group of leaders that a long time ago helped create the statute of creating the Colorado Disability Funding Committee that gained the rights to the historic license plates and retired vanity plates. And through selling those, that brings in enough money for us to be able to offer grants. And so right now we just launched another $2 million grant. We just finished up another $2 million. We're going to be doing more this summer. And so we're also trying to put money back into the community led by people with disabilities for people with disabilities so that they have that same opportunity, which is pretty amazing.
Super cool.
I wanted to circle back a little bit.
Black license.
Please do. Yes, we need them. Or the red one or the blue one or the original green one.
Like, I was like, I just got a new plate and I didn't know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to circle back a little bit because what you said about Temple, I had the opportunity to go to the Colorado Neurodiversity Conference in Longmont. Saw Temple speak. She has the Temple Grandin School, which was used to be right around the corner from my son's school, which is Mountain Shadows Montessori.
Yeah.
And she has a book out called Visual Thinking.
Yeah.
And she talks about, and I'm about halfway through the book right now, she talks about object thinkers. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that with your son, is that he sees pictures. I function the same way, too, as an architect. I see pictures in my head. And so, to me, it just seems like there's this wasted opportunity. I mean, how did America become a great nation? Mm-hmm. Is that we utilized every single person, immigrants, et cetera. And now we have this next wave of people that have been underutilized, which is the neurodivergent population. And how do we provide the supports to bring them up to the level of being able to contribute? Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head. And Temple's actually, I'm very fortunate to say, become a friend. She keeps in touch. And if she hears this podcast or if she heard me on the radio, she'll call me. It can be like 10 o'clock at night. And like, if I don't pick up, she'll call back. And if I don't pick up, she'll keep calling until
she's
answer,
persistent.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The school that was named after her in Boulder, she doesn't work directly with them, but they do amazing work. It is pretty incredible, too. And I think that showcases the validity of what her name and what it stands for and all that she's doing. She actually came to this TACT and got to tour. And she had mailed me a copy of her book when it came out. And she signed it, which I thought was awesome. And then I wrote a book. And she wanted a copy and wanted me to sign it. And that was a really wild moment when she asked me to sign the book that I wrote for her. That was pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right in the sense that you look at the diversity of thought. And I think that when you think about cognitive diversity, that's one thing that's been really kind of weeded out. And I think that's why there's this resurgence of recognition of neurodiversity is that the school system, you can look back at it historically. I mean, educators will tell you after Sputnik launched in 1957, there was a clear shift in education that started transitioning the diversity of thought out of the schools. I mean, my grandfather, that one of the tradespeople that I talked about, he helped design the lunar module. In fact, my home office, I have his drawings for Grumman before it became Northrop Grumman when they designed it. All of those engineers, they had high school educations. They didn't have master's degrees and PhDs and all these fancy topics of physics and architecture and et cetera. But they thought about things differently, and they asked different questions. And we've gotten away from that as we've embraced this notion of putting people through like it's a factory line just to get them through and kind of diluted the path for them to express who they are individually. I think it's finally people are saying we need to get back to that.
The part before I pass it back to Matt is I have to jump in here and say, like, you don't know what you don't know, and boy, you're jaded by what you think you know, right? And so I challenge my daughter to step up to the mic. And why I asked her to do that is because you have to be relatable on all this stuff, right? Because there's so many different acronyms and so many great stories out there, but you have to get the private sector to meet up with this stuff, right?
100%.
And so my daughter's friend, it's her younger sister that she said that story about. And so that is relatable for me. And I kind of challenged myself coming into this podcast to find the heartstrings. Like I did not do it, the IDD, until I jumped in. And, you know, that Kevin Bacon, as Matt always talks about, you have to figure out how to jump into that story.
Yeah.
And I'm that serial entrepreneur business person that's looking for a business edge. But sometimes you just got to stop and look at the different places and different things out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things in her book she talks about is just the move away from vo-tech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just sitting here thinking about it as I was writing on my pad. The word tech is in there, right? I mean, there's high tech, there's bro tech, the computer tech. Vo-tech is a tech, right? And so it's something.
Tech, and it's gotten so.
Well, yeah, it needs to come back.
It does, and I think, you know, Mike Rowe will talk about, and I think we're going to talk about him a little bit later, the fact that it used to be vocational education was part of the training, and as the system seemed to kind of minimize it, even minimize the name, we even stopped calling it vocational, you know, technical education, just went to voc-tech. And it's very conscious that, like, as the idea of this field became considered lesser than, they also minimized the name at the same time, too. And so it became consistently move things down less and less.
Hey, so if you listen now, you can hear kind of the buzz in the background. There are tables set up with businesses, including Hyundai. Was a personal favorite of mine. We have three Hyundais, and we've had six total.
Awesome.
So I told the guy, hey, thank you. Appreciate it. But can you talk a little bit just about the vibe in the room and a little bit about, in more detail, what's going on today?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we keep talking about the fact that the neurodiversity community is the highest unemployed demographic in the world. When TACT first had its first employment job fair, it was a first. There's still not fairs that are seeking out. The way that they're structurally set up to be neuro-inclusive and provide the opportunity for all individuals to come in and have this opportunity. And that's what this space actually does. And the fact that all of these businesses are here, when you look around the room and you see all these people, I think it's validation that these businesses hire people and want people that bring value to their business. It's not about just checking a DEI checkbox. It's how do we make more money? How do we bring creativity, innovation? And I think that by having them come in, and even this space we're in, which used to be an old tube factory, there's the gear wall on the wall. This space, all of those individuals jumped in to help make this possible, and this was done by businesses that hire TACT graduates. And I think it's pretty amazing in the sense that you're sitting in a room that's a physical manifestation of businesses seeing the value proposition and the return on investment of embracing neurodiversity and neuroinclusion. And it's pretty lively when you actually look around the room and you see that all these people are happy. They're breaking down the barriers and the stereotypes of what people think of when they think of neurodiversity, and they're going to step into incredible careers.
You know, and I'm going to go a little bit like out here. It's not a pity party.
No.
It's not an empathy party. This is a profit party.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who see what we just talked about earlier is the loyalty and the focus, which used to exist in corporate America where, you know, pension funds, companies took care of their employees. Employees were loyal to the company.
Yeah.
To me, this is like a recircling back to what made America great during our industrial age.
That's 100%. And to bring it full circle back to Temple, when she tells her story of how she got started, she sold her ideas. It was, how is she going to change the industry for them so they could make more money? That's what they wanted. They wanted the innovation, the creativity. They wanted that new thought. People don't like getting stuck in the same ruts over and over again. And I think neurotypical or neurodivergent, I think people are recognizing that we need that kind of new blood coming in, if you will.
So we want, Art of Construction wants to be a guide to help broaden and deepen what you're doing here, because this is the first of its kind and we want to do more of these, right? Can you give perspectives or some figures of what's working for these people that are here at the job fair to go out in the world?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to note that, you know, a lot of European studies, at least, I haven't seen as many done here in America, will recognize that up to 20% of people in the trades themselves are neurodivergent. There was a reason that shop class was so popular among a certain demographic of people. Those of us, myself being neurodivergent too, we looked at the world differently. We saw pictures. We had a hard time sitting in the way that school was structured of, you know, pretty little rows with your feet under the desk in front of you with the fluorescent lights. That was hard for some of us. But when we were in shop class and we were working with our hands and moving around, that made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. We could learn through that. And most people learned through that. And I think that that's important to recognize that a lot of these businesses that are established, they just didn't realize it at the time of what neurodiversity actually was. And I think that when you start looking at the fact that, too, a lot of the trades folks themselves are neurodivergent, you start looking at a lot of entrepreneurs, and it's roughly 35% of business entrepreneurs are neurodivergent, whether they have ADHD, autism, they're dyslexic. When you go around and you talk to these businesses, you'll start seeing and hearing that, and then once they see what TACT does, all of a sudden they're more likely to support them because they're like, okay, this was me, we just didn't know what it was called at that time.
So one of the things I want to do is I'm looking out here at this wonderful job fair, and I'm seeing all of the potential people that the community all working to where the people that are looking to hire people on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
I'm going to call myself out here a little bit as a small business owner to where you don't know what you don't know, and I'm just going to say, can I own a window and door company up the street?
Mm-hmm.
Can I? Should I? Would I? Am I willing and able to hire someone with autism to move windows, install windows, drive a truck? Where can I do this the right way without stepping on people's toes when flipping which side of the desk you're on when it comes to hiring or being hired?
You absolutely can. And I think, you know, we've gotten stuck in this rut when we look for talent that we've gone about it for the same way for a long time. And one of the stories that I always love to talk about when it comes to tact clients is there was a client, Mark, our employment director. When you get a chance to see the stuff that he does, he goes out with all of the different candidates as they're like looking for their jobs and trying to get employed. There was an opportunity where an individual was actually going for a tech job, and he sat across from the HR person, just like we're sitting across from each other now. And the person asked him a question: are you proficient on Microsoft Excel? That is not a good question. And so the kid was honest and said, no. Devin, are you proficient on Microsoft Excel? Matt, are you proficient?
No, I have a CFO for that.
Right,
I
exactly.
Be out moving
I'm willing
the
to
windows.
Bet we would BS the snot out of that and be like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm proficient. This person was honest. And so that HR person said, okay, well, you know, thank you for your time. This isn't going to work. And then stepped in and said, no, that's not the right question. Ask him what his favorite part about Excel is. Mm-hmm. They reframed the question, and he went on to all these things. I can program this. I can do these graphs, all these different things. That was the right question. Mm-hmm. That was what the person wanted to know, but they didn't know how to ask. And so I think as a business owner, when you're looking to invest
And I love that answer. That's why I'm trying to be real about it, to say, like, reverse what seat you're sitting in.
Exactly. And just what is it you're really trying to look for? When you want people to come to work for you, you want them to be honest. You want them to show up on time. You want them to work hard. You don't want them noodling on their phone, looking at their Facebook while they're trying to move something because they're going to break it. Or you don't want them talking about what they did at the bar the other night and what they did, how they were out late drinking at the concert, or whatever it is, right? You want them to be that employee that comes in and says, hey, this is where I want to be. And that's what our community brings, is it's the social piece that people end up hiring for. I think that we've missed it in the sense that most hiring is done by people saying, oh, you know, your office is really beautiful, and I think, you know, the way that the drive-in was perfect, and all these kind of things that don't mean anything, really. That we're not actually trying to obtain the information that we actually need to see. So I think when employers reframe the questions, which doesn't cost any money, by the way, it's free to reframe your questions, all of a sudden you can start bringing in talent that you're really looking for. And I think that's what all these folks are doing, is they're finally at that spot where they're saying, okay, how do I ask the right questions? How do I, you know, gauge whether this person is going to come in, and how do I set them up for success? Because I think, you know, we're going to talk about
and then get the right training of the trainer, right? So that's where I'm here to say, like, I'm so proud of my leadership team because they want to execute the traction, right? They're not a visionary like me. They don't like doing these podcasts or being out here. But we need to guide, you know, the leaders and reverse engineer this stuff to where we hire the person so we know that not just asking the right questions, but how do you be better leaders and managers?
100%. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head too with the training has to be appropriate. And what TAC does is it's by design, smaller class sizes, hands-on learning. Even a lot of trade programs today, which are amazing, and I think we need more trade programs, they're still so textbook and computer-based. You are not going to learn how to be an auto mechanic by reading it in a textbook and watching a YouTube video. It can augment and actually increase your ability of what you're doing.
Construction is my focus, is going into my world of, like, I always say, you learn by doing. You just got to go 100%. Out for a year, and you have to actually understand how to safely move the windows and doors, but more importantly, get the construction prep for that, which is a safety landmine, right?
Exactly. 100%.
And so, like, understanding how do you put the theory and practice together, you got to go get perspectives, right?
I love that,
Devin. And you mentioned this at the beginning of this, to where, you know, the call to action, there's so much exciting stuff. It's like, I'm like a kid in a candy store. It's like, I want to get my install wall to have a window and door install training because they're actually going to want to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And if you do it the right way, that's really cool. And so we have to get other perspectives. Of one of my favorite lead-ins to this conversation today was, like, seeing your passion about Mike Rowe with the cars coming around the corner.
Yeah.
And you and I had a conversation around, like, that's really cool because he'll get more awareness by somebody stepping up that. And that's really where I wanted to be another touch point of sitting here looking at you in the eye at this event today. I said, I don't want to just record a podcast whenever. I want to do this in a way that gets the most momentum, because that's what we all have to do together. Can you talk a little bit about the dad teaching the trade to the autism community that Mike Rowe did with you?
Well, I think, you know, Mike Rowe's been a great supporter, and not only did he do the online presentation for us, he was out here recently. He donated another $100,000, the trailer outside. He does incredible things because he's recognizing the way that we're going about it is very unique, and I think he sees the value in the neurodiversity community in the trades too. And the way, you know, from the dad perspective, the way that my dad taught me was out in the garage, out in the job. I'm guessing it's the way that a lot of our dads taught us. We were working beside that. You brought your daughter here today. Yeah. You're teaching her in person. And it's that same kind of approach. I think it's important to recognize of all the things that we're doing, it's kind of not just this magic pill that just by having a program for people with autism that it fixes it. It doesn't. It's in a sense, and what I mean by fixing it is there is some very real things that go on where our community needs the time to really get it. And by putting it here in this setting, they have an opportunity to fail. They have an opportunity to thrive. They have an opportunity to succeed. If they do mess up, that's okay. They're taught how to recover from that and actually succeed. If somebody just gets placed into a job and they mess up, employers aren't happy. So we need to actually practice and simulate all of those experiences. Even things that we do here where students actually practice quitting. None of us were ever taught how to quit in school. We all remember that first job when we get to a spot where it's like, man, this isn't working. I need to actually leave.
And it's so painful. It sticks it's with awful. You forever.
It's terrible. Yeah. But like, we need to actually have the opportunity to go through those moments. And by doing that and setting them up to get that experience here, then when they go into an employment setting, they're that much more successful. It needs that time. And I don't think it's just the neurodiversity community that would benefit from that. I think it's neurotypicals or anybody benefits from that. But we've gone past that approach where it's now just here we go. And I think Micro recognizes that. And I think that's one of the reasons he's been such a great supporter. Last time he was here, he actually brought a bottle of his whiskey. He's got a great whiskey that goes towards his nonprofit. And we sat and had a glass of whiskey together and just talked, and it was so much fun. I mean, he's just a really
as a guy, a bourbon guy that makes...
Oh, we don't drink. We don't drink, but it sounds good.
There's a special line in the show notes. We got to find out what... My favorite bourbon is the next one I haven't tried. And it's always... It's the setting and the experience around it, or the story, is just as important as the taste, right? Because there's a lot more senses that you have to figure out how to put together, right, Matt?
Yeah. Now, in my first job, I didn't have the option to quit. It was with my dad, who... was a hand sign painter, so yeah, like I had to cut angle iron to make those real estate signs and block out signs and run a hand crank crane to put signs up, you know, three stories up. But it's interesting how the three of us all come from a hands-on tech, vo-tech background.
Yeah,
I want to go to a high level now.
Okay,
in your position as the executive director of the CDOO.
Yeah.
Not Ski-Doo, but Sea-Doo. Can you talk about legislation that you're currently working on at the state level? And I know you've got a lot of connections that we share in common with different state senators and state representatives, but also even at the federal level, because, you know, ones with the gold or the funding are the ones who make all the rules, and you got to attack it at that level while you're going to grassroots level.
No, 100%. And I think... You know, part of the legislative stuff that's going on right now, and Tuesday there's going to be four different bills that are going forward, is it's all about setting up the least restrictive environment possible for our students. What still happens is our kids are viewed as lesser than. People with disabilities are kind of put in this box and not given that same opportunity. And I think hopefully legislation is recognizing that equality of opportunity that needs to exist to have a truly equitable future for everybody to get that, because they're still not getting that. The fact that a program like TACT, for example, had to come about because our community wasn't given the same opportunity. When you go to other programs that have autistic individuals in the trade programs, there's a trailer out back and some iPads. There's still the fact that TACT was turned down for insurance 13 times when this was getting started, because insurance companies were afraid of what it felt like or what it would look like to put autistic individuals on a table saw or behind a welding torch or under a car lift. That's very real.
Yeah.
And very real, but you had to have the passion when I walked through here to overcome that, and you had to take your passion for your son and get others. Like when I learned the story about the welding areas that the people that donate
Miller and General Air. General, I mean that's a great, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because looking at that, right, and that's a great example, again, where it's parents or individuals in the community that are changing it. So Miller came about. Miller's the largest welding supplier in the country. Miller and Lincoln, right, would be the two bigger companies. And the owner of General Air, who's third generation himself, has an autistic son, and same thing like me, looked at it and said, this is just not going to work for our kids, what this future looks like. He happens to sit on the board of Miller, and so all of a sudden called them and said, hey, look at what these folks are doing. And again, when they donate to us, they see the value in it. They look at it and say, okay, these kids are exceptional. They're going to be exceptional in the field. We want to actually support that, so when they come about, our industry keeps thriving. We want our industry to keep going, and we want to invest in that so that the next generation of folks coming in see that. And I think that's really, I mean, the auto program with Toyota and Subaru and Mitsubishi and all these different organizations that have come in to support this, it's all about return on investment and value
proposition. And I appreciate you going and giving some context around that, because at the end of the day, you have to put the legislation and the businesses together, and that's what mm-hmm. we're doing here with the Art of Construction of the Master Facilitators, because at the end of the day, those brands you just said
yeah.
are getting a lot of not fake awareness, real awareness. And uh-huh. that's what Matt and I have been sitting here this morning of, like, What was the tagline that Matt's one of my life coaches of, what you say when I was going on a rant about politics and this and that, and you said chaos, and very simplified what's going on in the world of, like, this is actually a really good feeling and good business.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I said, man. I think it was like divine inspiration.
It was insightful. It was
my mouth
was
moving,
but you didn't have the answer.
I wasn't thinking.
It was along the lines of, the world is full of chaos.
Well,
right,
yeah,
you know? and it's very enlightening and feel good to be here. And I think that's important to stop and say that. That's why I like doing these live. It's much easier for us to just hit record on the pre-interview and not put attention into all the work to be here.
Right. And to bring it full circle too, I mean, talking about that, you brought your daughter, you asked her, she's 10, does she know anybody with autism? And she does. Did you know anybody with autism when you were 10? Or were they in your class? I didn't. It was very, very different.
I probably haven't.
Right?
I don't know.
And
so, who knows?
Right, exactly. And so the fact that everybody knows somebody with autism, it needs to be brought more to the forefront. We need to be talking about this. It needs to be something that our community is collectively talking about. Because, Matt, like, the work that you're doing and the stuff that the Trailhead folks are doing, there is a coming ship full of a community that have been living with their parents, and they're going to need that opportunity for the future, and people are not talking about that. And there's this upcoming generation of individuals that are autistic in schools, and they need more opportunities like what's being done here, because the traditional ways that we've gone about it, they don't lead to this level of success that's desirable.
So I remembered what I said.
Seven times for the first time.
Yeah, you know, the neuron fired. And so, yeah, it was talking about, with all the chaos going around in the world right now, like not only United States, but around the world, is that I just recently finished a book that was on Solheimr, the eco-village in Iceland. And it was started in the 1930s, right during the rise of fascism and Nazism in Germany. Mm-hmm. And it was one woman who decided that it was not okay that these people just got parked in institutions. Mm-hmm. And so what we were talking about is that you just focus on your little slice in the world. Mm-hmm. And that what you do is just try to bring good into that little piece in the world. And then you get enough aggregation going on from everybody doing that, and you all start rowing in the same direction. That makes a difference. So can you talk a little bit about how you built your tribe?
Yeah. Well, I think it was built from a dad. I mean, I think what becomes kind of, you know, desirable is the fact that, and Devin, I appreciate you seeing, like, passion in the sense that, like, it's taking those of us that are going to say, like, what it currently exists is not good enough and putting everything into it. I mean, Becky and I don't want to tell you how much money of our own money we put into this. I mean, starting something in the back of a 58 Chevy and growing it to this in 9 years through COVID and a period of time where a lot of other businesses struggled, you know, going to the extreme of getting pieces of legislation, and that comes from passion. And I think people get behind that when they see that it's something that you're invested in, that it's not just this facade that exists, because there's a lot of people that are just the 9 to 10. But more importantly, everything that we do here, we bring in other businesses. There's other nonprofits that compete with TACT here today that are going for the same grant opportunities, the door is still open for them to be here today. There are other, you know, organizations like that that would be considered quote-unquote competitors. That doesn't matter. And I think that's the important part, is that we're trying to share everything we've learned, because until people start breaking out of their silos and saying, okay, you built this amazing thing, how did you do it so I can do it too? I think that's where things really change. And I think where what's happened in the past is people have been so, you know, guarded on what their ideas are. We're not like that. People call from all over. I mean, we met in Arizona, and I mean, that's a great analogy about Denise, by the way, because she is definitely that. She's incredible. And that was a great example of everybody just talking, like, what are you doing that's working? How do we learn from that so we can do it too? And I think we need more people like that, because in order for the ship to turn, it's going to have to be all of that.
You know, and Ed, you know, that was a point I wanted to make, was Devin and I are very competitive people, and we're entrepreneurs.
I think we all are, for entrepreneurs.
And we like to get out there. But yeah. The beauty, and I was sharing this with Devin this morning before you came and we started the podcast, is that the beauty of this community is that people are unselfish and loving. I mean, not only the folks with intellectual developmental disabilities, but their parents, caregivers, guardians, advocates. Everybody's all rowing in the same direction. And I've talked to a few people in this space and outside the space and said, there are 37 million people in the United States. Do you think you're going to solve this problem yourself and build enough housing by yourself for these people? We need to share, like, it's the parable. You need to start fishing so you learn the lessons and where to not step in the dog poop. But it's really about teaching people to fish. And so it's all of us working together, teaching everyone else how to fish so that we can actually make a difference in the next decade.
Agreed. And I think that's where Sea-Doo can come into play, is make sure everybody can come to the pond and get the same fishing poles that they need to be successful, because that has not happened in the past. And I think as we start getting everybody and start talking about it, and I think you're exactly right, we have to all start leading by example and talking about it. You know, one of the harder things for this, I mean, when I left TACT to work for the state, that was hard. To, you know, put down my guitar to start this, that was hard. Mm-hmm. But, like, these are all things that, as a parent, need to be done. Like, we all have to, I think, do something like that if we want to actually have real change.
You have to build your tribe to build our tribe. Mm-hmm. And the Matt always guided me to say, when you're talking with a group, if you want to really innovate and do something, don't use the word I. It always has to be we. You got to live in we land. But when you live in we land, you better still come from the man who spent 10,000 hours to get there, right? And so you're the guitar. You don't just play the guitar. I've tried, and I don't have the guitar talent. So I listen to others and now enjoy it in different ways. Yeah. Or you set up and, you know, helping play those different instruments, but at the end of the day, you have to orchestrate this network, right? And so what I want to hear from you is, like, okay, you came from TACT, then now working for the state, so like a real small business, like your own blood, sweat, and tears, literally, physically, everything, to now working as a government employee, guy looking you in the eye in the middle saying, like, what advice would you give me of a guy from the podcast Kindling of trying to figure out how to be the Art of Construction master facilitators of building an ecosystem, to say, what advice would you give for the hub and spoke to say, how could you and I go take a school in Northern Colorado that just got shut down and turn it into this and have Art of Construction come together? What advice would you say through this podcast Kindling is how we could build our tribe?
It's a great question. I saw a meme that said the difference between illness and wellness is just I versus we. And I thought that was an interesting meme. I'm not a meme guy, but it's a really good point, because you're exactly right. It's going to take we. And I think the advice would be recognizing that exactly what you've already said, Devin, is that this isn't going to be done by one person. This TACT, now what I'm doing for the state, the Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce, all of it came from asking questions, willing to be a learner first, willing to say, what am I doing? What's not working? Being willing to pivot and shift and actually change and grow. And I think that if we can all work towards that mindset of actually humbling ourselves and asking questions and willing to learn from each other, that's going to be possible. And I think that for the businesses to actually look at what they've done and have the reflection to be like, okay, looking at the trades, there is tons of openings. I was in a presentation in Vermont, and they talked about 63% of businesses had openings. 63%, and I'm willing to bet it's not any different in Colorado. What have they changed that's leading to different results? Because if they're not changing anything and they're getting the same results, they're going to keep getting the same results. I mean, that is the definition of insanity, right? Mm-hmm. To keep doing the same thing over and over again. So I think we have to start thinking about it differently, looking at programs like TACT that are approaching it differently and saying, okay, it's teaching differently. It's approaching transition to employment services differently. It's in approaching the whole workforce interview process differently. What can we learn from that? And can we take a moment to say, like, okay, what are we doing in our business that isn't working? What is working?
I got to share a story as I'm sitting here looking down here at all these parts. And around the corner is my favorite part of this, which is the millwork area. Mm. And one of my favorite classes was back when they still had a shop class back in South Dakota. And we were making these signs. And I came home and I was like, my stepfather raised me, let me use all the tools. And I was out there and I like made this sign for my mom. And I came in. And I don't remember, I'm going to have to look it up and put it in the show notes. And I put the sign, and I put it in front of it, and I made the sign. It was like some message. And my younger brother goes, Devin, you spelt it wrong. And so I had routed the word wrong.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shoot. And I was like frustrated. So I just left and went out there, and I like made another sign, and I screwed it over the top. And my mom still has that. I have to find a picture of that. And the statement I say with that is, if you want to go fast, go alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to go far, go with others. But the cool thing about this whole thing is that you have to say, you just got to keep fighting and you got to keep learn by doing. And there's people like me that was just fuel for me because I'm the oldest of them. And that was just one of those. And then you just get through it. But like sometimes those are the best messages, right? Because it's just not perfect, right? Yeah. You have to tact it together, right? Well, so as we work to close this thing out, I want you to kind of talk through and expand on this of 9 years. Mm-hmm. We're proud of you, man. That's super cool.
Thank you. Super cool
here to be here in person with you. What is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to technology in construction? When I say my story about making the sign a millwork shop, but upstairs you got all these 3D printers and computers and all this stuff of truly this is living and breathing the art of construction. What is that crystal ball with a future of technology and construction from Danny Combs'
point of view? You know, in 20 years, I think it's going to be the where education itself and the technology that goes into education is going to be completely different. That training is going to look completely different. We're going to have to get more tradespeople. And that the idea of stepping into the trades won't be this, you know, lesser than, just like as a service member of the military, lesser than, they view it lesser than. That there's going to be this opportunity for people to look at it and say, okay, to see the value behind it. Because in 20 years, the tools and technology that we're going to be using in our day-to-day life are going to be built by these individuals that we see right now. And I think that they have the opportunity to frame it in the way that more people like them can be successful. And I think by looking at the idea of universal design and what's working for neurodivergent individuals is going to be the idea that works for everybody. So I think it's going to be completely different. And essentially, like modular construction, when you look at that, 3D printing like we're doing now, the lasers, the technology behind it, all of those things are going to be everywhere. We're going to still need people that know how to take things apart and use wrenches and test lights and multimeters and can problem solve it, because of all those machines and technology that are going to be put in place, they're awesome. There's still going to need to be people that know how to fix that. And so the skills that they're learning, they're laying down that foundation. The stuff that like my great-grandfather and grandfather did with airplanes that then led to aerospace, it's no different. I mean, like my grandfather started working in the Air Force, working on various airplanes. He ended up ending his career helping build DSP satellites and the lunar module. It leads to that direction, and I think that's going to be the same thing we're going to see here. I'm kind of excited about it. As long as I get to keep driving a car with a carburetor, I'm happy.
Nice. I couldn't agree more. We got to get your crew down to our event center. It's all of our vehicles all have carburetors down there. All the Jeeps and everything is stuff that is you just got to tinker with, right? Well, the final question we always ask, and then will Matt give us his closing thoughts. Thank you all for being part of this and aligning Art of Construction to the story. As we always say, that we got to leave a call to action in the riches or in the niches, Danny. What is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
I think the call to action for them is to start looking at the neurodiversity community and recognize there's this incredible group of people, and then they need to invest in it. They need to come out. They need to see it. They need to put their money where their mouth is and say, okay, if we want really good workers, we're going to actually support it. And I think when you see the list on the wall of the businesses that have stepped up to the plate and done that here, they can see that others are leading and they can join in too. And I think it's a real opportunity.
Awesome. Danny, thank you so much for leading the story. Matt, what are your takeaways?
Yeah, Danny, thanks for joining. So,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those, when I was down in Arizona, Denise gave a little background like on who Danny was and what he's accomplished in his life. And I remember sitting in the audience, and it was the same way I felt when I got to the end of the movie Gandhi. And I'm like, God, I haven't done shit, you know? I mean, that's who this guy is. So please go into the show notes, look and see what the man has done, and it's impressive. My final thoughts are, that was the comment, really just a call to action, is that the way the whole system is set up right now, federal, state, local, mm-hmm. I'll call it caretaking, right? It's really about caretaking for the IDD population and IDD community, and we need to move towards empowering. Mm-hmm. And so that's what TACT is doing. That's what the Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce and CDOO is doing.
Yeah.
And so really, for that community, it goes from surviving to thriving. Mm-hmm. And so my challenge is to everybody out there in listener land, all of our AOC tribe, is look at your businesses, make local contacts, and figure out how you can put this eager, willing, focused, and loyal population to work in your company.
Awesome. What do you say? Let's jump out there and go meet some of these wonderful, empowered people. Thank you for stepping up.
Thanks.
All right. Crush it out there, tribe.